Chapter 4, Concentration, Keeping Your Head in Play. Jack Nicklaus describes going from a broad focus prior to shots to a narrow focus as he approaches a shot. Then he returns to a broad focus after he hits a shot. I still can't concentrate on nothing but golf shots for the time it takes to play 18 holes. Even if I could, I suspect the drain of mental energy would make me pretty fuzzy-headed long before the last putt went down. I've developed a regimen that allows me to move from peaks of concentration into valleys of relaxation and back again as necessary. My focus begins to sharpen as I walk onto the tee, then steadily intensifies as I complete the process of analysis and evaluation that produces a clear-cut strategy for every shot I play. It then peaks as I set up to the ball and execute the swing, when, ideally, my mind picture of what I'm trying to do is both totally exclusionary and totally positive. Unless the shot finds trouble, when I might seriously start processing possible recoveries, I descend into a valley as I leave the tee, either through casual conversation with a fellow competitor or by letting my mind dwell on whatever happens into it. The next buildup of concentration begins as I reach the marker from which I'll pace the distance to my ball and start figuring yardage. Note that this is where Nicklaus's routine begins on each shot. My focus then gradually tightens as my caddy and I complete the math and I again finalize a clear-cut play strategy until it again peaks at address and during the swing. Nicklaus describes his third phase of concentration on approach shots to the green. As I walk toward the green, I return to the valley, although rarely quite as deeply as after the tee shot. Then I gradually begin to emerge again at whatever point I can begin to assess my next shot, be it a putt, chip, pitch, sand shot, or whatever. The peak occurs during the setup and swing, or stroke, after which my focus remains fixed and sharp until the ball is finally in the hole. Larry Bird led the Boston Celtics to 3 world titles and was the NBA most valuable player 3 times. He said, "My biggest fault as a golfer was my strong point as a basketball player, concentration. On the court, I could never have told you who was sitting in the front row. Everything but the game was invisible to me." Paul Azinger had a bout with cancer during the 1994 season. He made his return to the PGA Tour at the Hawaii Tour stop in 1995. In June 1995, Azinger said, "For the 6 or 7 year stretch, I felt like I out-concentrated 90% of the field 90% of the time. I don't feel anywhere near that right now. I recognize that is a problem. I'm trying to get back into that level of concentration and committed focus that I was on when I left the game." Thoughts about concentration from 2 of the greats. Byron Nelson finished in the money in 109 tournaments in a row. He won 11 consecutive PGA Tour events and a total of 19 tournaments in 1945. He was voted Athlete of the Year by the Associated Press poll in both 1944 and 1945. Nelson says that concentration is standard equipment with all champions. He further states, "Success has eluded many golfers of mechanical excellence simply because they did not realize the importance of concentration or had been unable to develop this power. Concentration is this decisive. A player who has all the shots and fails to fully concentrate each time he plays one will often lose to an opponent of inferior mechanical ability who exercises to its fullest his faculty for close mental application." Nelson said that a loss of concentration due to mental fatigue was a primary factor in his 1945 win streak ending. Gary Player, winner of all 4 majors, and that includes the Masters, the British Open, the U.S. Open, and the PGA Championship, and numerous other tour events, has similar comments about concentration. "The difference between an ordinary player and a champion is the way they think. It's as simple as this. If you don't concentrate, you're not playing your best. There's absolutely no question that golf is a game of mind over matter. A golfer has to discipline his mind to keep absolute attention on what's happening that very moment, not on the bogey made on the last hole or on the tough par 5 coming up next, but on the particular shot at hand to the exclusion of everything else. During every major championship I've won, I concentrated so hard that I played rounds without knowing my score. I've often been in a don't-know-who-I-am sort of daze. Total relaxation with complete control. Player goes on to say, concentration takes years of practice to acquire. It's difficult to come by and easy to lose if you let up. An integral part of developing concentration, of course, is self-discipline, the kind of self-control that teaches your mind to do what you want it to do. The neuromechanism of concentration. There is a system located in the brainstem that neuroscientists refer to as waking brain. This system processes the sensory information to the brain and selects out content that makes up conscious thought. We refer to this filtered focus as concentration. The desired concentration level on the golf course is similar to that which many people achieve when they are reading a book they like. No matter what is going on around you, you don't hear or see it because you are so focused on the content of your book. Your mental filter is working so that no content outside the book comes to a level of conscious awareness. The average golfer plays the way many of us used to study a school subject we found uninteresting. We could read a chapter or several pages and not be able to recall any of the content. Our mental filter was letting all the extraneous content into our conscious awareness while filtering out the content of the book we were attempting to study. Many golfers just aren't mentally present during a shot. I believe the zone or flow state so many great players describe when they play their best is mostly a function of concentration. However, your ability to concentrate is dependent on many different interacting variables. Most of these variables interface in and around the neuromechanism of concentration in the brainstem that ultimately affects the higher brain and vice versa. When we become aroused, the body mobilizes for action, and there is an acceleration of activity in the part of the brainstem that serves as the filtering center for concentration. The body mobilization, or alarm, is a danger signal produced by the higher brain. The process begins with information entering the nervous system through the filter in the brainstem. At these times of arousal, this filter system selects out information for conscious thought and opens and sensitizes us to each area of sensory information by scanning the environment for impending danger. This scanning produces an overload of sensory information. Hearing and vision become more acute, the senses of touch, taste, and smell heighten, and it is difficult to think about one thing for very long. The overloaded circuitry of your nervous system has billions of neurons firing like an electrical storm. There are so many that a flood of thoughts becomes part of this firing process, and one's ability to focus concentration diminishes. This wreaks havoc when we are faced with life's three-footers. Concentration strategies of top players. When you played your best round of golf, what were you thinking about? What did you think about before you got to the golf course? What did you think about before each shot? What were you thinking about during the shot? Were you patient with poor performance and bad breaks? Let's look at how some of the top players think when they perform their best and see if they are similar to you. Most of you will see that their thinking is not much different from yours when you perform your best. During an interview after the third round of the 1992 Honda Classic, where he had a two-stroke lead, Fred Couples said he did not like to get too far ahead. He said he used to think about winning when he would be ahead and then not win. Now he thinks about playing a hole at a time. If your thought focuses on anything other than the shot you are playing, your performance will suffer. LPGA Tour player Sherry Steinhauer won the DeMaurier Classic in August 1992. Since the beginning of the 1989 season, she had started the final round of seven tournaments in first, second, or third place, only to falter. She summed up the change in her thinking during the final round as follows. I just tried to play one shot at a time and not think too much about where I was or what I was trying to do. LPGA Tour player Carolyn Hill was a college All-American, a 1979 Curtis Cup team member, and winless on the tour 14-plus years after turning pro. She won her first event August 1994 at the McCall's LPGA Classic at Stratton Mountain, Vermont. She described years of work with a variety of professionals, from sports psychologists to martial arts experts. Regarding her win, she said, I really did a good job of playing one shot at a time. I stuck right with it, moving the ball from point A to point B. I wasn't thinking about the last shot or the next shot. Similarly, Gilberto Morales won the Junior World Championship in July 1992. The Venezuelan shot an 11-under, 279 for the week. Morales credited his victory to a focus on hitting good shots, one at a time. Upon winning the Payne Weber Invitational in May 1993, senior PGA Tour player Mike Hill said, "I practiced being more alert. Sometimes I just go through the motions on Friday, almost like I'm shadow boxing. This week I thought I should concentrate harder on Friday." Patty Sheehan won the Standard Register Ping to place herself in the LPGA Hall of Fame. She said of her final round, "I didn't start off very well, so I kept telling myself, one shot at a time, don't think about anything else." Jack Nicklaus says, "The more tense I am, the more I try to think of just one shot at a time, one situation at a time." It's not only when you're playing poorly that your concentration diminishes. It can also occur when you're playing well. Sam Snead was playing a 1953 Ryder Cup match against Harry Wheatman. He recalls that after 30 of 36 holes, he had Wheatman four down. He was so sure his record of never having lost a Ryder Cup match was safe. He said, "In my mind, I was ordering a nice steak dinner when we walked up to number 31. Sam lost five of the next six holes to lose to Wheatman by one. Sam Snead concluded from this experience, a good rule, never collect any trophies in your head until you have them in your hand." Similarly, in the 1966 U.S. Open at Olympic Club, Arnold Palmer held a seven-stroke lead going into the final nine holes. It appeared he clearly had the title won. Palmer said he lost track, or focus, and began to think about trying to break Ben Hogan's U.S. Open scoring record. Palmer dropped his seven-stroke lead and lost the Open title to Billy Casper in a playoff. Patience. Patience is a process of combining focused concentration and redirecting thinking that is unrelated to the present. Patience is a big part of mental toughness. Mental toughness is a trait all peak performers have. When you lose patience, you lose focused concentration. Simply stated, patience is the ability to stay focused and resist the emotional and physical decay in the face of frustration. Sam Snead described a practice round at his first PGA tournament in Hershey, Pennsylvania in late 1936. He played with George Fazio and two other tour professionals. He discussed his first four shots. The first two were big slices out of bounds into a chocolate factory. His third tee shot went into the water just off the front of the tee. He had hit three shots and none of them were in play. The other three professionals had hit 260-yard drives down the middle of the 345-yard hole. Two of the professionals grumbled about Sam's level of play, but George Fazio calmly and patiently told Sam to hit another ball. Sam's fourth tee shot landed on the green 20 feet from the pin. Sam shot a 67 in that practice round. His point to this story is, never give up. Many players hit a bad tee shot and immediately conclude that they have bogeyed, doubled, or tripled the hole. They give up. They have no patience. They lose their focused concentration. Sam Snead summarizes the process of giving up. "In tossing in your cards after a bad beginning, you also undermine your whole game, because to quit between tee and green is more habit-forming than drinking a highball before breakfast." Players not only learn the bad habit of giving up on a hole, they give up on nine or the entire round once they lose their concentration. How many times after six or seven holes of marginal or poor play have you thought, "I'll get it back on the backside"? As soon as you lose your focus, your play will further deteriorate. Sam Snead cites another example of having patience and staying focused at PGA Tour stop Westchester Open. He said he hit three straight drives so far out of bounds on the third hole that the Eagle Scouts couldn't have brought one of those balls back. He further adds that he had patience, continued to play a shot at a time, and was carried off the 18th green on the shoulders of the crowd when he won the tournament. When you hit a ball out of bounds, into a hazard, or you have a big lead going into the final holes, stay focused. Don't quit. Don't guard your lead, and play every shot as though it's the only shot you're going to hit that day. When tour players describe the reasons for their wins, it is not uncommon for them to cite patience as a reason. Craig Stadler attributed his 1991 PGA Tour Championship to being patient. Jack Nicklaus reportedly attributed his 1972 U.S. Open win to patience. Everybody was three-putting due to the conditions of the greens. He reflects that he just had enough patience to finish and win. Patience for the weekend golfer is hitting several bad shots without analyzing his swing and attempting corrections. Don't try to create the shot or analyze why. That belongs on the range with an instructor. Recognize this is the time to practice patience and be mentally tough. Performance expectancies. What happens when you drop your last bit of change into a soda machine and nothing comes out? Well, you probably try the coin return or another selection. If that doesn't work, you might hit or kick the machine as you walk by. Why? Because you have a one-to-one expectancy. That is, you expect to deposit a set amount of money into the machine and receive a soda. Many golfers have this same one-to-one expectancy on the golf course. They expect to hit a good to great shot every time they swing the club. The frustration and anger produced by failure to produce positive results, in this case a soda or a good to great golf shot, in these situations stays on your mind and disrupts your concentration until you are able to set it aside. Decay. Psychologists call this process of a gradual decline of behavior due to an inability to produce positive change, extinction. The inability to produce positive change relates to anything from hitting a golf shot to waiting in heavy traffic. The resulting behavior is frustration, irritability, and an inability to focus your thoughts on what you are doing for any length of time. Mental toughness is the ability to persevere, avoiding frustration and anger, or to express patience. Instead of extinction, I refer to this process of frustration, anger, and loss of concentration as decay. When we behave in ways we believe should result in some change, and nothing follows, we try again and again, finally giving up with anger, loss of concentration, and frustration. Muscles tense and physical arousal follows as part of this decay. We lose patience. The person who lasts the longest at the soda machine, or who can hit several bad shots or experience repeated bad breaks without aroused aggression, loss of concentration, and performance deterioration, has low arousal, high frustration tolerance, and patience. How long would you last at the soda machine? How many bad shots or bad breaks does it take before you experience a deterioration in performance? Do you have a high resistance to decay? How many three-footers do you need to miss before you lose your concentration during putting? Or you consider changing putters or making some mechanical change. Most of us expect perfection in performance. We expect to make most putts from 5 feet. We expect to hit most fairways off the tee. We expect to hit most greens in regulation, and so on. The reality is that the best players in the world don't meet the expectancies you have for yourself. Nicklaus says that when he and Hogan were playing their best game, they expected to hit only a handful of shots in a round, exactly the way they wanted to. He further says that even at the highest levels of golf, perfect shots are mostly accidental and extremely rare. Walter Hagen reportedly expected to hit 7 bad shots in a round. When Walter Hagen hit a bad shot, he just chalked it up to one of the 7 bad shots he was going to hit that day. What a nice way to fend off the emotional and physical consequences of decay. Expect to hit every shot perfectly, but when you don't, talk to yourself about realistic expectancies. Consider Hagen's, Nicklaus's, and Hogan's strategies for yourself. These will help you be patient and maintain your focused concentration. Jack Nicklaus said that he took the little bit of patience that came with the blessing of having a disciplined disposition and worked it up into a lot of patience through conscious and hard-willed self-control. If you are striking the ball well on the range, expect to strike the ball well on the course, one shot at a time. If you expect to score well just because you are striking the ball well, or you expect to hit every shot perfectly, one of two things will likely occur. Number one, when you hit a shot sideways, your tolerance to frustration will be lowered. You will become more easily frustrated, and your concentration will begin to diminish. This will likely lead to a swing analysis of why. The increased frustration and associated arousal will spill into a faster tempo. Number two, your concentration focus will be on score during the round. Your thoughts will be predominantly on the future as you calculate score and not on the shot you are playing. LPGA Tour player and former U.S. Open champion Meg Mallon says, "You're just going to have those days when it isn't there, But more often than not, if I'm practicing before I play and I'm comfortable with how I'm hitting it, I'll go out on the course and spray it all over the place because I've lost my focus and concentration and have relaxed too much. The distance disease. Let's discuss distance as an expectancy. Men, in particular, are fixated on distance. When they find themselves in a group with a long hitter, they tend to compete. There must be some unwritten guideline of level of masculinity being equated with distance off the tee. These pairings with long hitters tend to create effort and tension in the swing of the shorter hitters in the group, and that spills into a deterioration in their performance. This results because of a change from focused concentration on hitting targets to another player's performance. Kenny Knox earned $423,025 in 1991 on the PGA Tour. Then, at the 1992 PGA Championship, he was paired in the final round with John Daly, who eventually won. Knox acknowledges that Daly's distance got to him. Not long after that tournament, Knox pursued instruction to learn to hit the ball further. With his swing changes went the rest of his game. Kenny Knox said it best, "The feel that you have, that's how you play the game. I really have lost that ability to play the game. That's what I'm looking for. I'm tired of swinging like someone else wants me to. When you're thinking mechanics, you're always changing your thoughts on the golf course. You make a good swing and say, that reminds me of a swing I made at the 1986 Honda. Now I'll try this." There's also the matter of attention. Remember, what you feed attention grows. PGA Tour player Tom Watson estimates that between 50 and 75% of the golf fans want to watch John Daly, the 1990 PGA Tour long driver, first and foremost. "I find it amusing to watch amateurs, usually men, try to compete with the distance of a long hitter in their group. I also find it interesting to listen to the awe expressed over a long drive. Did you see that? He hit it off the planet." Or, "He nearly drove the green on number 7. Shots close to the pin or long putts are admired, but nothing like the long drive. Advertisers are aware of the distance disease. "Hit it further." Or, "The longest ball in golf." They must sell balls. These slogans have been around for a while. When Senior Tour driving distance leader Jim Dent was asked how he has changed over the years, he says, "Chipping and putting, which I worked on a lot before I came out on the Senior Tour. Years ago, I almost never worked on them. I used to practice hitting the ball long because I thought that's all I had to do. I found out that wasn't true. You have to get the ball into the hole to score well." Ben Crenshaw finished 23rd on the 1995 PGA Tour with $737,475 in official money. His average driving distance was 253.1 yards. He was 172nd on tour in driving distance and 49th in putting. Corey Pavin finished number one on the PGA Tour money list in 1991. He was named PGA Player of the Year. His average distance off the tee was 252 yards in both the 1991 and 1992 seasons. He says, "I lost concern for distance long ago. I can hit at 270 when I want to, and that's far enough. I made 8 eagles last season." Pavin finished 18th and 8th on the 1993 and 1994 money list, respectively, with similar driving statistics. He won the 1995 U.S. Open, finishing 66th out of 73 players in driving distance with an average of 257.3 yards. Tom Kite, winner of the 1992 U.S. Open, ranked 51st in hitting fairways, 29th in hitting greens, and 5th in putting among the 66 players who played the final two rounds. Kite had 25 putts both Saturday and Sunday. During the last round, he made putts of 15, 18, 20, and 35 feet and shot an even par 72 to win by one shot. Similarly, Jeff Sluman hit only 6 greens on Sunday while making only 1 bogey and shot a 1-under par 71 to finish second in the tournament. Annika Sorenstam and Laura Davies finished 1st and 4th respectively on the 1995 LPGA Tour money list. Sorenstam ranked 4th in putting and Davies 10th for the 1995 season. Monty Scheinblum was the 1992 National and World Long Drive Champion and finished 2nd in that event in 1991 and 1993. Monty's goal is to one day play on the PGA Tour, and he's a good player. 2 weeks before winning the Long Drive Championship in 1992, He shot a 63 at Southern Links in Illinois to tie Ray Floyd's course record. Monty will be the first to tell you that he didn't tie the course record by hitting the ball long. He did it with his short game. The better he hits his short irons, he putts and chips, the lower his score. Due to his distance and course management, Monty uses his driver much less than the average tour player. PGA Tour player Dennis Paulson finished the 1994 season second in driving distance. His longest drive of the year was 385 yards. Jose Maria Olazabal shot a course record 63 on Thursday, the first round of the PGA Freeport-McMoRan Classic. Dennis broke the course record the next day with a 10 under 62. He followed on Saturday with a 74 and finished fourth in the tournament. Dennis said he didn't hit the ball much better the day he shot 62 over the day he shot 74. The difference was his putting. When Jack Nicklaus won the 1992 Senior U.S. Open, he reportedly used his driver 17 times in 72 holes. Gary Player won the 1962 PGA Championship at Aronimink without ever using his driver. So, what should you do when everybody is hitting it past you and you find yourself swinging for the fences, trying to keep up? Peter Thompson won 5 British Opens and some 100 other tournaments around the world. He relates advice he received from Sam Snead. Sam once gave me a wonderful tip. He told me on the downswing, the longer you take to hit the ball, the farther you will hit it. It's just a feeling. You wouldn't vary 1/10 hundredths of a second, but it's the feeling of not rushing. That's the trick. Recall that one of Nicklaus's 3 swing keys was to feel the same pace on the downswing as on the backswing. I would also encourage you to practice with a focus on grip pressure. Feel a very light grip pressure and hold that same pressure for the entire swing. If you go after a ball on the tee, you will likely increase your grip pressure at the top of the swing and hit an errant shot. Research shows 25% of the game is wood play, 43% is putting, and approximately 72% of the game is played from 150 yards in. When you are on the tee, focus your concentration on your fairway target and repeat the feeling of your practice swing. A distance focus will tend to create effort, tension, and errant shots. Your best distance and accuracy will come naturally, not forced. Realistic performance goals. The 1995 PGA Tour statistics show the top players hit an average of between 10 and 13 greens in regulation. More specifically, the top tour player in greens in regulation was Lenny Clements with 72.3%. The top putter in 1996, Brad Faxon, averaged 1.709 putts per green in regulation. Mark O'Meara wasn't far behind at 1.737. So what are realistic expectancies for you if the top players on tour hit 10 to 13 greens and average just under 1.75 putts per green in regulation? Other statistics show that the average tour players make 45 to 55% of 6-foot putts, 15 to 30% of 10-foot putts, 10 to 22% of 15-foot putts, 6 to 16% of 20-foot putts, and less than 10% of 25-foot putts. The best players in the world make about one-half their putts from 6 feet. What would you think if you missed 2 in a row from that distance? Do you have realistic expectancies? As I said, I want you to expect to make every putt, be determined and confident. However, when you miss, place that miss within a realistic expectancy. Resist decay. Stay focused in the present and your next shot. Once again, if you hit what you perceive as a bad shot, stay where you are. Set up and make another swing. Your nervous system will store your last swing for a brief period. You want to groove memories of good swings, not bad swings. Secondly, taking another swing will help you deal with the emotional discharge of frustration. Play the course, not your competitor. Ben Hogan had an interesting approach for tournament play. He never concerned himself with competitors or leaderboards. His focus was the course. The contest was between his playing ability and the course. He would walk the course during a practice round, assess the conditions, and decide what score he had to shoot to win. As part of his tournament preparation, Hogan would walk the course backwards starting on the 18th green. He would determine the best landing areas for approaches to the greens. Then he would place his skills in a contest with the course, not his competitors. When Hogan won the U.S. Open at Oakland Hills in 1951, he shot 76, 73, and a 71 the first three rounds. Upon recording a 67 his last round, he said, "I vowed I would bring this monster to its knees." Similarly, girls junior champion Kelly Booth won 24 of 57 national junior tournaments she entered. She finished out of the top 10 only twice. She claimed her eighth national title of the year with a victory at the 1992 Edgewood Tahoe Junior Classic. Following this victory, she said, "Everything has come together for me this year. Before, when I had the lead, I would play the other players. Now I'm more set on playing the course, and I'm able to focus better on the last round." Once Hogan started a tournament round, he would often not acknowledge a great shot hit by another player. A story is told about Hogan being paired with Claude Harmon in a PGA Tour event. Harmon made a hole-in-one. Hogan made no comment. When they got to the next tee, Hogan asked who was hitting first. In summary, play the course as your challenge, not your playing partner. When you focus on the judgment of others, or win in competition, you become occupied with another player's play, your score, or anything that takes you mentally out of the present, your performance will suffer. Playing the course will keep you focused on the task at hand. Also, treat yourself as you would a good friend. Be a good friend when you talk to yourself. Have realistic expectancies and accept poor shots, while at the same time, expect peak performance. Have patience. Be mentally focused and tough. The chapters titled How to Talk to Yourself On and Off the Golf Course and Lift Clean in Place will teach you strategies to stay focused. One shot at a time. Nancy Lopez had 43 career LPGA victories going into the Rail Charity Classic in Springfield in late August 1992, not having won in over a year. She said of her recent history, "I hadn't won in a year and my nerves weren't good. I'd look at a leaderboard and make a bogey on the next hole." She took some time off at home with her family. Upon her return, she won in Springfield and again in Portland the following week. Regarding these two wins, she stated, "That winning concentration that I hadn't felt for a while crept back in, and it was with me again here. With that concentration, the putts started dropping for me again. That had been my problem. I'd been striking the ball well, but not making many putts." Greg Norman describes the intensity of his focus during the rounds where he recorded some of his lowest scores. Doral and Turnberry stand out. The 62 at Bay Hill and the 62 at the 1986 Canadian Open come to mind. All it is, you get so focused on what you're doing that you don't even know what score you're shooting. Nick Faldo was leading in the 1992 French Open by two strokes on the 14th tee. He then lost five strokes over the last five holes and shot three over on that round, finishing tied for third. He described his thinking during this five-hole struggle. "I'm a nerd. I screwed up 14 and 15. But even at 15, I hit a really good shot. At 17, I was brain dead. Okay, I thought to myself, I've had enough. My mind was on the 18th green. I hit it as though I was mentally drained." The 1990 Masters, Wayne Grady approached the 18th hole of his last round. He thought that all he needed to finish in the top 24, which would get him an invitation back to the Masters in 1991, was to par 18. He was on the front of the green in two. He ran his first putt by the hole 6 feet. His second putt for par missed again, running by 2.5 feet. He was certain he had missed the top 24 and said, "I was in sort of a daze and I walked around and missed the next one." As it turned out, a bogey would have made the top 24. Regardless, Grady won the 1990 PGA Championship. That win earned him a return trip to the Masters. Remember, it's never over until your ball rolls in the hole on 18. If the fat lady starts to sing before your final stroke in 18, don't listen. Mark O'Meara describes Ray Floyd's level of concentration. "I told him at the Ryder Cup he is the most intimidating player I've ever played against. He plays every shot like it's the last shot of his life. He's like a black leopard stalking the jungle." Off-course concentration practice. Let's review a procedure described in the chapter on relaxation, quieting movement, and focused thought through mindfulness. Remember, quieting your thinking will also quiet your nervous system. As already noted, most of us mentally live in the future, especially during routine activities like grooming, dressing, travel, and so on. Also recognize that if you have a habit of future focus and distraction off the golf course, that is likely going to be your pattern on the course. Concentration is not something you can turn on and off like a light switch. You must practice. Number one, set goals and ignore deadlines. When you have something to complete by a specific time, ignore the clock. Focus all of your thoughts on what you are doing, not how much you have left to do, how much you might not finish, and how much time you have left. Be mindful. All other thoughts will accelerate your nervous system and impair your performance and mood. Be dispassionate and non-emotional. Accept intrusive thoughts. Allow these thoughts to pass without reaction, and then return your mental focus to the present. Number two, be mindful during your daily routine activities. When you go about your automatic daily routines like grooming or driving your car, be mindful. Focus your full attention to every color, sound, feel, smell, and taste. Focus all of your thinking on what you are doing. Notice how relaxed and in control you feel with this exercise. Again, be dispassionate and non-emotional with intrusive thoughts. Listen to the themes of these thoughts and note what drives your moods and nervous system. Purposely remind yourself to redirect your thoughts to the present. Practice going from a broad to narrow focus. Practice going from a narrow, specific focus to a broad, general focus. And then return to a narrow focus, and then again to a broad attention focus. Spend 60 to 90 seconds in each of these concentration states. You have the ability to focus on a sensation anytime you choose. Think about the feeling of your big toe on your right foot. That information was always being transmitted through your nervous system to your brain. You simply used a mechanism in your brainstem to focus your attention there. This is an example of a narrow focus. The more precise your attention is, the more narrow your focus becomes. Thinking about the sensations of your big toe and your right foot is a narrow focus.
This is the end of Side A. Please turn the cassette over now for Side B.